Hello, I'm Maria Titizian.
And I'm Rubina Margosyan, and this is The Week in Review.
Every week, we bring you the stories shaping Armenia and the region.
From politics and policy to social issues and conflict, we break down the news and what it means for you.
This week in the news, 10 Armenians who remained in Artsakh after its fall returned to Armenia. Armenia's intelligence agency says risk of war is low, even as rhetoric from Baku intensifies. And Prime Minister Nikol Pashinyan joins Trump's Board of Peace in Davos. These stories and more in our weekly roundup of the news.
10 Armenians who remained in Artsakh after the 2023 ethnic cleansing, along with one Armenian citizen of Russian ethnicity, have been transferred to Armenia. Social Affairs Minister Arsen Torosyan said the individuals applied to the authorities in both Azerbaijan and Armenia with a request to relocate. It remains unclear whether any Armenians are still remaining in Artsakh following the forced displacement of the Armenian population. Estimates of those who stayed behind have varied. Former Artsakh State Minister Artak Beklarian previously had said that, according to his sources, more than 25 Armenians remained under Azerbaijani control. Artsakh's Interior Ministry spokesperson, Hunan Tadevosyan, however, had said that between 8 and 10 people remained in Artsakh of their own free will, noting that some had mental health issues, others were destitute, and some chose to stay in their hometowns. In December, an Azerbaijani court had sentenced another Armenian, 58-year-old Garen Avanesyan, to 16 years in prison on charges including terrorism and illegal possession of weapons. Avanesyan had remained in Stepanakert after the 2023 displacement and was arrested in September of 2025 during a visit by Azerbaijani President Ilham Aliyev to the city.
Yeah, there was a surprising piece of information that we learned just a few hours earlier, wasn't it? That all of a sudden they're back.
Right.
And because it was hard to see, you know, especially in those early days when we would see images of them, you know, sort of wandering around a desolate, deserted city. Anyway, it's going to be interesting to see what precipitated that, right?
Exactly. And why now?
Why now? Yeah. Armenia's top intelligence agency says the risk of war with Azerbaijan is low. However, concerning rhetoric coming out of Baku has intensified. In its annual report published this week, the Foreign Intelligence Service describes the likelihood of military escalation in 2026 as highly unlikely, pointing to last August's Washington Accords or peace agreement that took place in the White House. Yet in the same document, it warns that cyber attacks, disinformation, foreign interference will intensify ahead of June's parliamentary elections in the country. The report paints a picture of hybrid warfare, the activation of agents and agents of influence, political actors operating under business cover, and the use of religious and cultural institutions to shape narratives and destabilize Armenia from within. And while, you know, open conflict may be off the table, Azerbaijan's military posture is moving in the opposite direction. Since 2023, Baku has increased military spending by about 44% and ramped up propaganda around the concept of this so-called Western Azerbaijan by 36% since the August peace declaration. And it's really disconcerting, isn't it, Rubina? Because on the one hand, you see Aliyev going around talking about peace. And then on the other hand, when you follow and track what they're saying through their state-controlled media and in his speeches, it's the exact opposite. And to see these numbers.
And what he was saying in Davos.
I know, which we'll come to in a minute. Anyway, the assessment also flags regional instability, from the war in Ukraine to rising tensions between Israel and Iran, as ongoing sources of economic disruption and migration pressure. The agency itself is a new institution, the FIS. It was created in 2023 as a civilian agency reporting directly to the prime minister after taking over key functions from the National Security Service. Its creation was widely seen as an effort to modernize Armenia's intelligence system. Well, we really didn't have much intelligence, and reduce lingering Russian influence rooted in the country's Soviet-era security structures.
Well, speaking of Azerbaijani President, Ilham Aliyev said Baku has unilaterally opened transit corridors with Armenian cargo expected to pass directly through Azerbaijani territory in the future. Speaking at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Aliyev said Armenia has requested permission to transport to Russia through Azerbaijan, a route currently dependent on Georgia, but one, he said, is likely to change. His comments followed an announcement by Armenia's economy minister that Armenia will soon begin importing Russian liquefied gas by rail through Azerbaijan. Aliyev also said Armenia and Azerbaijan have lived in peace for the past several months, something he noted had never happened since both countries gained independence in 1991. He said both sides must continue to demonstrate the benefits of peaceful coexistence to secure public support, adding that he remains optimistic the process will not be obstructed. He said that normalization between Armenia and Turkey is moving in parallel with the Armenia-Azerbaijani track and would ultimately conclude with the establishment of diplomatic relations between Turkey and Armenia, as well as between Azerbaijan and Armenia.
Prime Minister Nikol Pashinyan was among the signatories of the Board of Peace Charter in Davos, an initiative launched by U.S. President Trump and formally unveiled this week at the World Economic Forum. Other signatories included Azerbaijani President Aliyev, the Kazakh President, Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban, several other heads of state. This Board of Peace was first proposed in September 2025 as part of efforts to end the war in Gaza, and was later mandated, actually, and I didn't know this, Rubina, to be honest, under a UN Security Council resolution to support post-war reconstruction and administration of the Gaza Strip. Critics, however, argue that it has strayed far from that mandate. The Guardian had written a piece I was reading, and they were saying that, you know, members of the UN Security Council had hoped that they were sort of bringing Trump into the Gaza process. But now it appears they were hoodwinked, as it said, into backing a Trump-dominated pay-to-play club, because there was news, right, circulating, especially in the Armenian media and the Armenian, let's say, social media space, that to be a member of this board, you had to pay $1 billion, right?
Yes.
So after much speculation about the cost of membership, the foreign ministry confirmed that Armenia joined without paying the $1 billion fee linked to permanent status. The spokesperson of the MFA said the contribution is voluntary and applies only to countries seeking permanent membership within a year of the charter's entry into force, and Armenia's government-approved participation is for up to three years, with no defined membership fee. So,
and it only remains to be seen if Armenia's current or future prime minister will remain in the in a boys' club that also includes Orban and Aliyev
and Pakistan and yeah.
Well, in other news, Germany will allocate a 120 million euro loan to Armenia, enabling the full financing of the Caucasian transmission network. German ambassador to Armenia Claudia Bosch said this week she described the project as being of decisive importance for Armenia's regional energy integration. Germany will also provide Armenia with an additional 152 million euros in loans and grants to support of green economy, technological and vocational education, renewable energy and energy efficiency, community development and public administration, as well as environmental and social sectors. The Caucasian Transmission Network is a long-planned project aimed at connecting Armenia's high-voltage transmission system with Georgia's electricity grid, enabling reliable and flexible cross-border power exchange between the two neighbors and more broadly across the South Caucasus. The project has been in development for more than a decade but has not yet entered practical implementation. Separately, during this week's parliamentary Q&A, Pashinyan said that under the TRIP framework, the energy systems of Armenia and Azerbaijan will also be interconnected, allowing both sides under the same conditions to benefit from electricity exports and imports. And this, it's not being talked about, but Turkey will be part of the grid as well.
Yeah, but I mean, have you been seeing the commentary? That's it. Armenia's finished because we will be interconnecting our electricity grids with the region. I don't know. I'm just saying. All of this, I think, is very new and very scary for a lot of people, maybe, to think that there's going to be collaboration in the region. But anyway, time will tell.
Strangely, again, as we mentioned, it was in the text, it's not a new project. This project had been initiated, well, the one though with, never
the
took
one
off.
With Georgia. Yeah, I think because now with TRIP, Armenia is having to make some, you know, changes. This is what's been disconcerting for many people. Well, meanwhile, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov again warned that Armenia's aspirations for EU integration are incompatible with its membership to the Eurasian Economic Union. He said simultaneous participation in both frameworks is technically impossible due to conflicting trade, investment, and legal standards. He argued that EU integration would require Armenia to align with EU law, foreign policy positions, and sanctions against Russia.
Well, no, this is nothing new. Russia has been saying this all the time, but we're mentioning it because it's coming from Lavrov, which is rarely the case, usually.
Yeah.
Usually Zakharova or other officials, but this is like becoming a
higher up in the hierarchy. That's right. Well, Lavrov pointed to Armenia's economic performance within the Eurasian Economic Union, noting that its GDP more than doubled, while trade with Russia reached a record $14 billion, while saying the decision ultimately belongs to the Armenian people, he stressed that the two integration paths cannot be reconciled. And certainly, I mean, anybody could see that if Armenia has EU aspirations to be part of the EU sort of economy as well, it cannot remain in the EAEU. So, that's fine. But then he goes on to address another issue, which is church-related tensions. He said he was puzzled by claims from Armenian officials, including Prime Minister Pashinyan and Parliament Speaker Alen Simonyan, that Russia poses hybrid threats through the Armenian Apostolic Church. He suggested the rhetoric reflects EU influence, citing Brussels' recent 15 million euro tranche to Armenia and arguing that such support comes with expectations of political alignment. Lavrov also warned that remarks by EU foreign policy chief Kaya Kallas about applying a Moldovan scenario in Armenia, referring to alleged election irregularities, should concern Armenian society. He further criticized the arrest of Gyumri mayor Vartan Khugasyan after comments supporting possible membership in the Russia-Belarus Union state, calling the prosecution of political views on external partnerships a serious cause for concern. And then Ararat Mirzoyan, Armenia's foreign minister, responded to Lavrov about his comments regarding Khugasyan and saying that it hints of, how did he put it, of internal interference by Russia, specifically regarding the Gyumri mayor's case.
And also pointing fingers at Europe, saying that's a form of interference, is actually from the Moldova playbook as well. So we kind of expected this to happen. And within any meetings we have with European officials, they say we also kind of are ready, because now with any kind of misinformation, disinformation assistance that we're offering Armenia, Russia is going to say that this is interference. And in church-related developments, Catholicos Garagin II this week dismissed Father Gusan Aljanian, the acting head of Armenian Diocese of Switzerland. Aljanian is among the senior clergy who have publicly called for the Catholicos' resignation. The church also announced that the next bishop's assembly will be held in Austria. The Mother See cited what it described as a campaign against the church and possible pressure on clergy as the reason for convening the assembly abroad. The meeting was originally scheduled for December, but was postponed for the same reason. While the Catholicos has invited bishops who are calling for his resignation, the Council for the Reform of the Armenian Apostolic Church, which includes those bishops, has called for the decision to hold the assembly abroad to be cancelled. In a statement, the Council stressed that the seat of the Catholicos is the Mother See of Holy Echmiadzin, the hierarchical and spiritual center of the Armenian Church, recognized both within the Christian world and the Church's own sees. The Council said no justification can be provided for not convening the assembly in Echmiadzin and warned that holding it abroad undermines the authority of the Mother See and discredits Armenian statehood. The Bishops' Assembly is scheduled to take place from February 16th until the 19th in Austria.
Well, the Armenian government says the Stockholm Arbitration Tribunal has fully rejected all claims filed by the Garabedian family in the case involving Electric Networks of Armenia. According to the government, the tribunal ruled that the interim measures sought by the claimants were unfounded. Now, the rejected requests included a demand to confirm Armenia's alleged non-compliance with a July 2025 emergency arbitrator decision to restore ENA's license and the powers of its governing bodies to terminate the authority of the interim manager and to block any forced sale or transfer of ENA shares or assets. Meanwhile, the In Our Way movement, this is led by the Garabedian family, disputed the government's account, saying the decision posted on the government's website does not reflect its actual content. Nare Garabedian said the Stockholm Arbitration Tribunal has reaffirmed the decision it issued in the summer, which obliges the Armenian government to refrain from taking any actions against electric networks of Armenia. He added that the tribunal also rejected the need for additional interim measures until the proceedings are concluded and said the government should act in accordance with the law by unconditionally halting all actions against ENA. And I mean, we've talked about this so much, but just again, as a reminder, the government moved to take over the electric networks of Armenia. The Garabedian family took it to arbitration, and this is where we're at. We can't find the arbitration documents. It's not public. So at this point, it's kind of a he said, she said, until somebody leaks some information and we have better clarity on the issue.
Armenia's National Security Service has urged Iranian nationals to refrain from participating in rallies in Yerevan, presumably following sharp criticism by Iran's ambassador. Over the weekend, police blocked a planned march by Iranian nationals from the Iranian embassy to the Blue Mosque on Mashtots Avenue, despite the march having been initially authorized by Yerevan City Hall. When some participants attempted to proceed, police carried out administrative detentions for failure to comply with lawful orders. Seven protesters were detained and later released. Participants said the municipality cited traffic congestion as a reason for canceling the march. A heavy police presence remained outside the embassy as demonstrators held a sit-in lasting more than 3 hours, during which tensions periodically escalated and several participants were moved from the area. Iran's ambassador to Armenia had earlier criticized ongoing demonstrations outside the Iranian embassy held in support of protesters in Iran. Speaking at a press conference, he accused Armenian authorities of allowing the actions, warning that they damage Armenia's image in Tehran. In response, Prime Minister Nikol Pashinyan reiterated Armenia's commitment to addressing Iran's concerns and defended freedom of assembly, noting that no peaceful rally or demonstrations have been banned in Armenia since 2018.
Workers at the Akhtala mining and processing plant have gone on strike, demanding higher wages. Around 50 to 60 drill operators are participating in the strike out of a workforce of about 500. The miners say they are expected to carry out additional tasks beyond drilling, including blasting and various mechanical and maintenance duties, without extra compensation. They also note that their wages have remained unchanged despite rising global copper prices. The plant's head of external relations, Gagik Shahnaz, Nazarian, said negotiations are ongoing to clarify the workers' demands, but emphasize that wage increases are currently not on the table. And this is not the first such strike in Armenia. Last January, more than 2,000 workers at the Zangezur Copper Molybdenum Combine walked out in a wildcat strike, demanding higher wages and improved working conditions. A compromise was eventually reached that included salary increases and upgraded benefits. However, 8 workers identified as the leaders of the strike were dismissed and have since filed a lawsuit seeking reinstatement.
And Armenia has declared January 27 a National Day of Remembrance for soldiers who fell in defense of the homeland. The bill, authored by Deputy Speaker Ruben Rubinian and Parliament Member Geram Nazarian, was adopted this week by a vote of 69 in favor and 15 against. January 27 will be a non-working day alongside January 28, which marks the formation of the Armenian Army.
Armenia's public debt reached $14.5 billion at the end of December 2025, according to the Finance Ministry, marking a 13.1% increase, or about $1.7 billion over the year. Domestic debt has now surpassed external debt, totaling $7.5 billion, driven mainly by increased issuance of treasury bonds purchased by residents. External debt rose to $7 billion, including loans from international institutions and foreign governments, as well as euro bonds. In March, Armenia issued $750 million in euro bonds to refinance maturing debt, making 2025 a particularly challenging year for debt servicing.
And this week's election news. which we'll be doing every week. Samvel Karapetyan's Merzevov in Our Way movement formally entered Armenia's political arena this week with the registration of a new political party, Ujek Hayastan, Strong Armenian. It was originally established on December 8 under the name Pro-Armenian Hayamet and was renamed Strong Armenia on January 16. The party is registered at the Yerevan office of the Tashir Group of Companies. Meanwhile, in Our Way movement coordinator Narek Karapetyan announced that Strong Armenia will hold its party congress on February 12, where it plans to name its candidate for prime minister. The movement spokesperson, Mariana Gahramanian, said the group aims to bring real and substantive change in Armenia through a political bid and active participation in political processes. She added that the organizational work of the new political force is in its final stage and that it will soon present a clear political agenda and its vision for Armenia's development.
And also this week in election news, Aram Sarkisyan's Republic Party also announced that it will participate in the June parliamentary elections. And just as a reminder, he's the younger brother of Vazgen Sarkisyan. After his brother Vazgen was assassinated in 1999, he became prime minister for a short period from November 1999 to May 2000. In 2001, he founded the Hara Beduchun Republic Party and supported opposition leader Levon Derbedrosyan in the 2008 presidential election. We were speaking earlier that he's activated every 4 years during the elections.
Serial election participant.
Yeah. So more and more parties and people are joining the fray, as it will. And as always, we talk about the articles that we published this week. We're happy to announce the launch of a new section called Statecraft and Governance by Nerses Kopalyan. He, as you know, was the author of our security reports, which we had started back in September of 2022 after the Jermuk invasion, when Armenia's security environment was really... I don't even know how to explain how it was very tenable and unstable.
Lacking security.
Things have shifted. And so now he's doing a new section and it will be more, foreign policy, governance, institutions, and such. And the first article of the section is called Armenia's Doctrine of Multi-Alignment, Strategic Partnerships, Not Alliances. And he says that Armenia's foreign security policy realignment is reshaping regional dynamics and introduces the doctrine of multi-alignment to Armenia's policy discourse. And he argues that diversification is rooted in this doctrine, one that favors strategic partnerships over alliances to de-risk security and enhance statecraft.
And Maria, you did another installment of It Has to Be Said. This time it was about hybrid warfare.
Seems like everybody's talking about it. Why not us?
But I do want, I did want to ask you, because you're not explaining what it is. You're basically also explaining a little, but you're more precisely pointing out to the effects it has. Mm-hmm. So why did you...
Why did I do that? Well, because I think everybody can look up hybrid warfare and get a dictionary explanation of it, but we don't often think about the effects of something. And for me, ever since doing this and preparing for the video explainer, I've just been following social media more carefully. I don't like to do it, but I do. I've been off Twitter for a while. I said, okay, I can't. I have to follow what's going on. It's just insane to me how these narratives are being pushed based on falsehoods. And the more people say they keep saying it, hoping that it's true. But then there are people who will believe them. And so the message, I think, that we wanted to give with this one is an informed public is the only antidote to attempts at hybrid warfare against the country, although people were unhappy. They, I'm an American spy or something, apparently. But I wish I would get good money at least. Nobody's paying me nothing. Sorry, it had to be said.
It had to be said. That's why the section is called "It Has to Be Said." Well, this week we had a piece by Olesya Vartanyan. It's part of her column, Beyond Borders. It's titled The South Caucasus in an America First World. She talks about how 1 year after Donald Trump's return to the White House, the United States has turned sharply inwards, opening an uneasy chapter with Europe for the South Caucasus. The shift doesn't necessarily signal renewed American engagement, but rather a region increasingly shaped by decisions made elsewhere.
Yeah, it was a great piece, actually. Very insightful, as always, with Olesya. And then we published a piece by our Hranush Dermoyan, Armenia's long road to health equity. And again, we had done a video explainer, another It Has to Be Said about universal health care. And it was funny, the reactions that we got for that. But anyway, so this is a very in-depth sort of dive into the whole process. And so she kind of looks at how the reform expands access and reframes healthcare as a social right rather than a privilege. But as always, the challenge is effective implementation. So if you want to understand sort of Armenia's journey to health, universal healthcare, definitely a good read.
And also definitely a lot of details about what phase one is about, what phase two is about, how it's going to work, who is going to pay how much tax.
I know, I kept calling her, Hranush, this doesn't make sense. What are you talking about?
But it's all there for all of us to go back and check anytime we need to understand what's happening from now until the end of the implementation of the whole universal healthcare. Well, and we have two articles this week about the Armenian language.
Oh,
very different.
Yes.
The first one is by Maria Kungo. It's called Armenian Language Open Doors. And as always in her column, Inside Out, Outside In.
No, Outside In.
Outside
Although
In.
Although I would argue she's more Inside
and
Out
at this point.
Days.
And I think this might be the article that proves that.
I know, I loved it.
Well, as always, she references her personal experiences in Armenia or about Armenian or about Armenianness.
And speaking of Armenian, we have Armenian children screaming in the snow at this moment. So if you hear anything, we're sitting by a window.
Yes. Well, just to give context, it's been a snowing all day today, and it's all white outside,
and
there is a kindergarten not far from us, so the children are playing in the snow.
Yes.
Well, back to Kungo. Well, reflecting on learning Armenian and the unexpected doors it opens, from a late night restaurant in Leipzig to a train station in Kent, Kungo reveals how this small language creates instant belonging within a global network shaped by kinship, hospitality, and shared identity. She's not Armenian. She's learned Armenian in Armenia because she's been living in. Her children speak Armenian when they won twice, maybe they visited the office.
I started speaking to the child in English.
Blonde children speaking Armenian.
Yeah. I know. And I think it was one of the best pieces she's written, really. It was very touching and really lovely. And you can see the reactions on social media. It's just been a great, great read. So she's a little bit of a gem for us. And then a new piece by Ellen Tovmasyan. It's called When AI Speaks Armenian, Podcastle's New Voice for a Nation. And again, we've been struggling with this too, right? With AI generated audio. We've listened to the Armenian. It's always been pretty.
Yeah, we our English language articles are AI generated,
right?
But for the longest time, Armenian wasn't.
Yes.
Our Armenian editor was reading them.
Or people
or
in the
staff,
office.
because we couldn't trust AI. Now we have switched to AI for Armenian very recently for the last four articles.
And it's not bad.
It's not bad. It's not Podcastle, though.
Yeah. Oh, well, anyway, Ellen writes that, you know, Podcastle has been able to create a new Armenian text-to-speech technology that sounds very natural in Armenian. And it's a very interesting take she has, and talks about how it can transform media, education, accessibility, and diaspora engagement while raising important questions about ethics like voice ownership and what it means for a small language to enter a global AI system. So a really great read as well this week. And that's it for our weekly podcast. Thank you for listening. Have a safe and peaceful weekend, and we'll be back again next week.